Back to Bergendorf today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten.
I'm Don Wooten. Conrad Bergendorf's funeral was 17 years ago. We'll look back at Tom Treadway's book on his life on Scribble. On the occasion of Tom Treadway's publication of his biography and a little bit more on Conrad Bergendorf, we thought it would be appropriate to go back to that interview today, 17 years after Conrad Bergendorf's funeral. This is the discussion, and Roald Tweet opens it.
My understanding is it's not just a biography, or it isn't even a biography. So people expecting a biography are probably not going to find one, right? I mean,
yeah, I think that's true.
I just got my hands on a biography of the Swedish theologian Gustav Hallén by a Swedish academic, and been reading it. And I discovered that that biography of a theological figure follows his life in the obvious chronological stages through which it developed, and Hallén, like Bergendorf, lived well up into his 90s. I decided that there were themes that ought to be dealt with in Bergendorf's life, and I felt that that those themes were a more useful way for me to treat him than it was simply to track him chronologically. So I made the decision to organize the book by chapters that deal with various aspects of his work, rather than to go through his life decade by decade.
At the same time, it is history, and history is chronological. So how do you manage between, at some point, even though his faith developed over a lifetime and was still developing, I guess, from your book when he died, nevertheless, there is some point at which you have to cover a particular topic, right? You can't just... this happened in this decade, and then this developed all the way through. So how do you handle the conflict between chronology and topic?
Yeah, well, I guess, I began by deciding that Bergendorf was an interesting guy because his life combined a kind of evolution in a number of the things that mattered the most to him, his ethnic background, which, surprise, was Swedish, and his religious commitments. And while there was evolution in each of those, the core way he understood himself and the way he placed himself in the context of other people and, for that matter, of the universe, never really changed. So I decided that I would build a book around that central core spine that ran through his whole life, his personal religious commitment, and then that the parts of his life where a kind of evolution took place, I would deal with subsequently. So it was the particular nature of his life that and of his perspective on the world and his sense of his place in the universe, his identity, if you will, that made me decide that this is the way I deal with the matter.
Another problem, it seems to me, for the kind of history that you have written is... Dr. Bergendorf for you was not just another subject, right? I mean, he was a colleague, an icon by the time, even when you had him, when you were a student at Augustana College, and certainly as a faculty member and president of Augustana College. So was it especially difficult to write about somebody that you were fairly close to and that you respected?
It was tricky business. Once in the dear dead days beyond recall, when I was being interviewed by Don Wooten on his Saturday morning show, And he asked me what I was going to be up to next. I know this is 5-6 years ago. I said, well, I think I'm going to tackle a biography of Conrad Bergendorf. And Wooten said, what? waking from his doze. How can you take that on? You're so close to it. Well, the fact of the matter was, and remains to be truthful, in one sense, yeah, I knew Bergendorf. I wouldn't say I was one of his close friends. I was in the crowd of people that, like I've said someplace in the book, got off the sidewalk when he passed, feeling that, he was a person who lived in a realm far higher than mine, and that the best thing to do was get out of his way and let him go about whatever business he was heading toward. But I also had a number of questions about him. To be blunt, as I've said in the conclusion of the book, I wondered about that core religious commitment. It was expressed in terms and reflected an outlook that I wasn't always certain I understood, and I was curious about it. And I thought if I read everything the guy wrote, when I made the vow, I didn't realize what it was going to cost me. It was a little bit like marriage. You make a promise, and then you find out that it's a little trickier to fulfill than you thought. But Bergendorf, I discovered as I plowed through, I think there are something like 90 boxes of his materials in the archives. He saved
93, yeah, to be precise.
Thank you.
Let's be precise.
Yeah, right. He saved everything, and as I've said a couple times, he saved everything that was supportive and complimentary toward him, and he saved the stuff that wasn't. I mean, there's stuff that reveals a side to him that we, in the student body when I was a student, and for that matter, when I worked here, we didn't see. But in any case, I just felt that I had so many questions about him that he was a far more interesting figure than the icon that Augustana and Quad City Society had to some degree made him into.
You know, I was thinking, mulling over this, what if I were to set out to write a biography of or the thought processes of Tom Treadway? The fact that I've worked for you and have known you as a friend and have seen you in official categories of the Blue Cat and all the rest, how would that impact my objectivity?
I'm still staggering from the preposition work right. For four, Wooten. I mean, that stupefies me. How did I never notice that?
You didn't notice?
I didn't notice you working for anybody except your deservedly high ideals in the interest of which you're willing to sacrifice petty people who got in your way, say, Tom Treadway, zum Beispiel. But...
Well, let's say that the tweet.
I worked for Tweet. I mean, I made sure he had chalk in the classroom and that the light and heat were turned on until we tore his building down.
Yes. I remember that.
But that's another story. That's another program.
That's another book.
That's another book. The answer to your question is... I think it's reflected in the kidding we're just doing. I mean, yeah, you and I worked together, but I don't think that meant that we shared a common perspective all the time at all. We had some goals that we were striving toward, in particular the foundation of this radio station comes to mind. But I think you'd be eminently qualified to take a shot at me, just so that everybody understood that it was Wooten's view, right, that Tweet would write a far more favorable biography of me, let alone what Ann Bowden would do.
But this book, I mean, I've read it a couple of times.
Yeah, I know you
because
did.
I read it
as a proofreader.
As a proofreader.
Yeah, I've been spared that so far.
It's far more than just Treadway's version of Bergendorf. I think it is genuine history and not just a festschrift for Bergendorf. For me, reading it, there were some big surprises. Were there surprises for you?
Yes.
Did you find, you said, you've been saying in almost all your talks that what is Bergendorf's secret is he was what he said he was.
Yes.
But still, were there surprises?
Oh, yeah. Well, that was the first surprise, that he was so thoroughly consistent to his core commitments, and that in the interest of the of those core commitments, he was willing to watch and undergo, and in some senses cause, a great many of the changes that undid things which early in his life really seemed to define him, at least externally, and made people think they knew who he was. If you took away that core religious commitment, then you got a guy who's just drifting with the times. But given that he held on to it and that he was, in that sense, who he said he was, I began to understand that many of these other remarkable changes that he went through were understandable and were personally sustainable.
So the changes were due to the fact that his core didn't change?
Well, for instance,
explain. I mean, one of the interesting things for me that I knew before the book was that he was almost single-handedly responsible for bringing this little Augustana Synod into the great LCA where it was lost.
Yeah,
and
right.
And then immediately when that happens, he begins a nostalgic trip.
Yeah.
So
that's
why good. Did his core commitment contribute to his pushing the Augustana Synod into a unit so large its own identity
yeah,
would
get
swallowed
up? Well, I think in the end he had to choose between perpetuating this little Swedish-American enclave, or as I almost called it the other night, ghetto, in which he had grown up. I mean, a group of never got much larger than 500,000 people swallowed up in the vast American social and religious scene. He was responsible. He had to face the fact that group had to be sacrificed in the interest of a deeper commitment, which was to that core sense of who he was and what it meant to be a human being. And that required that he reach out toward, in this case, other Lutheran people and join with them in an organization that would embrace most of the Lutherans in North America rather than simply live exclusively in a little enclave that was in any case disappearing as its language and customs changed and shifted.
You know, digging into a person's core values, beliefs, that's a tricky business. How can you be, well, are you confident that you really got to the core?
Well, I tell you something, Don, as I've said in the third chapter of that book, what opened my eyes was reading a biography of St. Augustine by a prominent American Catholic scholar who said that in the end, for Augustine, God, G-O-D, was a set term, and he never got past or behind it. He never defended his use of it. He never explained it. It was one of, I think by set term, this guy O'Donnell thinks it means it's one of the fundamental assumptions, the fundamental assumption in Augustine's life. And I discovered the same thing about Bergendorf, different words, same fact. He had a bedrock assumption about what it meant to be a human being, what it should mean for any human being, and he never gave up on that. And it was a set term for him. I don't want to beat it to death, but it was this idea that you ought to have a relationship with Christ. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, as I said twice now, in one sense, I bumped up against that, and to be truthful with you, I never really got past that. That's who he thought he was. You know, Tweet and I used to kid about, going to the garden alone when the dew is still on the roses, when you have a walk and talk with the Lord. Bergendorf never talked about what was going on when he had these moments, but he had them. And he thought every human being ought to have them, and to the extent that you didn't, well, your life was poor. And I never got past that with Bergendorf. I just had to concede to him that he had some set terms in his life, and you got to give him that. And I hope you'll do the same for me. <wouldn't you?
laughs> Well, that for me was the big surprise in reading the book. It's not just, his term is it isn't born again, but it's fairly close, right?
It's what you and I both knew growing up.
Personal encounter.
Yeah, absolutely. Right?
And that I did not expect.
Yeah. Because he was so dignified and operated with such aplomb and at points aloofness, I mean, such dignity and such presence, that it was hard to believe that in the end, except for the fact that he didn't sing the same choruses and memorize the same Sunday school songs that you and I learned, he had that same core experience that we were told we were supposed to have.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's, you know, I'm sure there's room now for a personal biography of Bergendorf. And would you be interested in writing
No.
that?
No. No. Well, in the words of another great betrayer, what I have written, I have written.
No, I mean, could you, having written what you've written, go back and do...
Well, you know, I mentioned Augustine. Late in his life, Augustine published his so-called retractiones, his retractions. Mm-hmm. You know, even in the couple years, since this book has been at least proofread and settled and sent to the printers twice... I've thought there's some things I wish I'd said a little further, a little more. And I wish I could add a postscript to the book, but I'm scratching for readers right now, boys. I don't know who's going to bother with a postscript.
Well, it is not an easy read, and I think a lot of people
killed sales, Tweet.
A lot of people may have expected that this was, you know, going to be Bergendorf's story.
Yeah, yeah.
As a coffee table kind of thing.
Oh.
And it is an uncompromisingly good piece of history.
But in consequence, I think it's a more interesting.
Oh, it is.
Well,
it is, and more lasting, right? I mean,
well, Roald,
and truer.
Pardon me. You said to me a long time ago, I mean, 10, 15 years, you said, you know, this is the kind of project a person could take on maybe 5 or 10 years from now, when a whole generation of people from Augustana and the Quad Cities, and for that matter from across the country, has passed, that would have been a little tougher to write 20 years ago. I mean, I remember those words because I thought, I'm lucky that I've lived long enough that I can take this on, because it really was a fascinating experience for me, I got to say.
Would it have been tougher for you than it would have been had you done it 5 years?
Oh, gee, it would have been much tougher 10 or 15 years ago, because already, I mean, I gave a talk the other night, and I saw some people who were a little nonplussed having read the book and who looked a little puzzled when I mentioned a couple things in the talk. For example, the fact that Bergendorf expected to be asked to be elected president of his Swedish-American denomination, prepared a written statement declining it,
right,
full of Bible support and theological references, and then never got asked. I mean, I think there were people who couldn't imagine that anybody wouldn't ask Dr. B to do anything.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Up and through, including walk on water.
Yeah. Well, it is, you've undertaken a vast subject when you move into the person's, not only their work, but the spirit.
Yes.
And it is something that, you know, this is not going to be Mickey Spillane. this is a deep book,
well,
and
thanks.
It is worth wading into.
You know what? You guys, at the end, I thought about that sentence. There's a lot there that I don't remember. But the sentence at the end, along with "he was who he thought he was," that mattered to me was, I said, some of us will look for certainty, the kind of certainty that he had all his life, and some will look for it in the same places he looked, and the implication I tried to leave is that others will not. But here's a person who built his life around certain things and lived in it a certain way, lived it out in a certain way, and some of us will find it appealing, and some of us won't. One of the publishers of the book is the Swedish American Historical Society. And unlike the Augustana Historical Society, that group based in Chicago is not populated by entirely devout Lutheran Christians. Sweden is one of the world's most secular countries, and there are many of that type of Swede in that organization. And as I set out to write the book, I thought, these people are going to read it too, and I've got to try to interpret this religious side of Swedish America to the Swedes and the Swedish Americans who don't share that perspective and are to some extent put off by it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you very much, Tom.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's always interesting.
Well, thanks. I really do appreciate. I can't honestly think of two people whose response to the book would mean more to me than you two guys. Thanks a million for having me on the program.
And we say, buy the book.
buy the book. And right now, we have a little music for you. Interesting going back to that after all this time.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's, why don't you write a biography of Treadway?
Because Treadway, being a historian, in the archives at Augustana College, there are 93 boxes of Bergendorf records.
Mm-hmm.
There is a 5-foot shelf reserved for Treadway in which there was one box with 3 items in it.
Really?
He left no trail whatsoever.
You know, I have the same feeling, because when I was voted out of office, I'd only been there 8 years. I've said before, 2 colleges asked for my papers. And I thought, no, I'm not going to be a footnote to history, because that's all the 8 years are worth. So I destroyed a lot of those papers. I since have found some that I didn't know I had, but they're mostly inconsequential things, I think. I think I saved 2 pieces of legislature that I was working on for the last 2 years, got them past the Senate, but I couldn't get them past the House. I found a way to do that, but then I lost the election, and those 2 pieces of legislation, which I thought were very important and still do, vanished. So, you know, that's about all I retain. And I can understand why Treadway would want to cover his tracks.
I don't know whether he did it or deliberately or not. On the other hand, the years in which he was president probably saw more, you know, the reason Augustana is still around today, I think, is primarily due not so much to Bergendorf as to Treadway. Treadway made real changes in a world that needed changing, you know, the old church college. Those colleges that decided to stay strictly with the church, many of them are in trouble today. And Augustana is in good shape today, not because we've had a whole series of leaders, but Treadway's leadership, I think, is a story that should be told. I'm just not sure it can be.
Well, if you can't tell it, I don't think anybody can. But it would be in, as he said, it'd be in safer hands with you than with me, because I did not know Tom that well. I used to think about him. One little thing, we'd go up to the surfboard, you know, at Lee's and so on, and I noticed that Tom was the center of that, and appropriately so.
Right.
When I came in, all of a sudden another little center developed, and I thought, I don't think I should be in this group. I stayed in for a while, but then I withdrew, because I thought, this is Treadway's circle, and I am an intrusion. I can't explain it beyond that. But
maybe we could talk him into writing a memoir.
I doubt that.
I doubt it, too.
Yeah, it's... I've been paid to write mine, and I don't think I'm going to do it. But that's, that whole business of writing about somebody's life, someone you knew, and particularly digging in as deeply as he did, that is an extraordinary thing to do. I remember when he was at work at it, he used to spend hours and hours in the library and just going through all those boxes. And I will tell you that there were things there that probably could be used to Bergendorf's detriment. that would blemish the memory of the man.
It doesn't occur in Treadway's history, but here's just one example. Mm-hmm. I realize this is the 70th anniversary of his death, but I came across, when I was looking at those 93 boxes, I came across a letter to Henriette Naseth saying that this was 1935, the middle of the Depression. We are according you a $75 raise for next year, but please don't tell anybody because we selected only a few to give this raise to. Mm-hmm. Well, that letter went out to every single faculty member that there was.
But, you know, it's true that if you look at every life closely, and I've pity politicians right now because you are under a microscope all the time. And every indiscretion, every mistake, every false foot that you've placed is going to be in a spotlight.
Which, if you're Lutheran, there will be, right? I mean, the Lutheran version of humanity is every human alive is both saint and sinner.
Yeah, that's true. But you don't like to have it set in print.
No, but it's there, and if you want to look for it, you can find it.
Ah, me. Yeah, but it was good to hear that conversation again when he was fresh off the writing the book, giving talks about it, and so on. And I must confess that I ran across that extra recording of it I had, and I thought, well, now here's something we ought to play again. Especially in this cold weather,
right.
Rather than ask somebody to come out in it. But we'll be getting to some librarians in a couple of weeks. And we also have to do a little bit about book reviewing. We don't quite have the luxury of time right now, just about a minute. Is there a minute's worth of promotion you want to give?
No, there's about 6 minutes I want to give. So
Well, I'm in the same boat because I've run across some books that I think ought to be discussed at length, and I think maybe we ought to do that. But we ought to get Treadway back in again to see if he's had second thoughts now that the book is out and people have looked at it. It's been reviewed, I imagine. I haven't seen any reviews of it, but then I probably am not reading the publications get at it.
I wonder how it did go over in Sweden, right?
Yeah.
That would be something to ask him. So I think we need to have him back again. And,
yeah, well, let's face it, we've been at this a long time. We've only had, I think that'll be about the ninth repeat,
right?
In
yeah.
all this time. And that was a precise repeat as what we had one earlier. But the others, we had people come back for a second shot at what they were doing and what they were working on. But anyway, it was good to hear it again, and I would not hesitate to get him up because he's always an interesting person. But I think that'll about do it for now. We are out of time, so we're going to call in our little theme and head for the gates. That'll do it for this time. We'll see you next week on the next Scribble.